we live in a oppressive patriarchal society, you know, and racist society, right? That has set up a way of being that just, yeah, doesn't set us up to really like ourselves very much in many different ways.
We have fed a narrative that our bodies should reach maturity and then mainly stay the same. Or if it does change for a societally accepted reason, say pregnancy or injury, it should bounce back after. But actually, bodies do change and grow throughout our life. But because of the messaging around us, we can be made to feel this is wrong and to fight against this change, feeling shame and distress around our bodies changing. Amanda and I will explore why we can feel so much shame around our bodies and how to foster body acceptance and confidence. You are listening to the Food and Life Freedom Podcast. I'm your host, Emma Townsend, a UK registered dietitian and a certified intuitive eating counselor. I support you to move away from lifelong dieting and feeling stressed with food to develop a positive relationship with food and connection with your body. And just a reminder that we are all unique. So please use this as an opportunity to learn and explore. But if something does not sit with you, then it's not meant for your unique self. And if you have any health concerns, please seek personalized support from a registered healthcare provider. So today's guest is Amanda Mittman. Amanda is a registered dietitian nutritionist, a certified intuitive eating counselor, and body image coach. Amanda knows that people, especially women, feel so much shame around their bodies. It is Amanda's mission to talk about this topic without shame, guilt, or a sense of failure, and to understand the systemic forces that cause us to feel the way we do about our bodies. So let's jump into today's episode. So I'm joined today by Amanda Mittman. Amanda, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure.
You're very welcome. And I'm really looking forward to diving into this conversation today on body shame and the distress that can be experienced in a changing body. But before we do get started, I'd love to just learn a bit more about you and how you became interested in body image during times of body changes.
Yeah, this is a topic that is near and dear to my heart because it pretty much is my story in terms of coming to terms with my here and now body, especially as a provider. But I live in Western Massachusetts in the US, and I own a group practice of there's six of us, and we are the only weight inclusive specializing in body image, intuitive eating, eating disorders, disordered eating, group of registered dietitians in my area. And I love the work that I do, and I love my team. And in addition to that, I own Bitchin' Body Image RD, and that was kind of born out of this desire, out of healing my own or working on healing my own body image, to help other dietitians and clinicians gain more confidence in having body image conversations with their clients. Because I think a lot of us dietitians and health professionals are just really scared to have those conversations with our clients. I know I was for sure. So I do that as well. And then I also teach nutrition at a university kind of close to me. So I'm the type of person that like needs to be doing lots of different things to stimulate my brain, but it is all, you know, grounded in weight inclusive practices. So yeah.
I love all the different levels that you have there. So you've got your practice working with clients who are struggling with body image or relationship with food. And then you've got helping providers who are already qualified. But that's something that I think all of us, or definitely the vast majority, missed out on in our training. It was very much just like you tell people what to eat. We missed this whole
Totally.
chunk. I can relate to that.
Yes, I know. Yeah, it's you know, our education, and this is not to knock it, you know, because it obviously got us to where, you know, where we are, but it is, and I teach now, I teach nutrition, and I see, you know, what students are learning in the textbooks they are using. And it we never learned how to like connect with other people. We never learned how to have these distressing, you know, conversations that involve someone else's distress. And that's why I think we avoid them. So yeah, our education was pretty lacking in a lot of areas.
Definitely.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And thinking back to the education, there were certain areas that I feel I got a lot out of, especially the clinical dietetics. So working with people who are
Sure.
unwell and who maybe
Right.
aren't able to connect with their body at the moment for different
Yeah.
reasons, or have different
Sure.
nutritional requirements that we can't really just use our intuition. But there was always this big part that was felt that I felt was missing, even if I didn't know what it was. So definitely helping on that
Yeah.
provider level and also the student level. I would have been so appreciative if I had more of that as a student.
Did you get your 1 hour of motivational interviewing? Did you get your, like, one class?
I actually had one class of, I think it was Health at Every Size, but it was definitely weight inclusive, Health at Every Size aligned, but it was one class in this sea of weight centric care. And I wish I took
I'm
more
just,
away from that, but I was in a place where I was
yeah.
so rushed, so much going on. It was like, well, that's interesting, but I've got all
Yeah.
these assignments that need to be done. I've got clinical placement.
Right.
I wasn't in the space to take that on from that one lesson.
I'm just impressed that you had that one class. I mean, that's amazing. That's almost like unheard of. And I'm just so happy that even if, you know, it's, I think of when you said, you know, I had this class, but at the moment, like, I wasn't able to really take it in. It's like, I read the Intuitive Eating book a long time ago, like in the late 90s, you know, early 2000s. And
Wow.
I was like, wow, like, this is amazing. Like, all you got to do is just, like, love your body and, like, love yourself, and, like, all your eating shit will go away. And then I was like, yeah, I'm not ready for it. Like, back to dieting, you know, because I was kind of in my own stuff at that time. And so, you know, we just get back to it when we're ready, you know?
Yeah, it can
So
plant those seeds as well, which is
totally,
really important.
exactly.
Yeah. And I think it would be helpful as well, just to start with like a more general question, to help listeners
Yeah.
understand what are we talking about when we talk about things like body shame and body distress?
Oof. I mean, I think we have to back up and say, like, what is body image, right? Like, what actually is it? And I think it's one of those things where if you ask a client what health means to them, you know, you ask 100 people, you get 100 different answers. It's kind of the same, because I love to ask people, what is body image? And what comes up is, like, what you think of yourself, or what others think of you, or how you care about what other people think of you. And there's a lot of, it's how we view our body kind of as we go through life. There is a behavioral component of it, right? So if we're experiencing, and I say body image distress, you could say poor body image, negative body image, bad, what, however you want to say it. But the behavioral component is, like, let's say I don't really like my body and I don't want to get in pictures, right? Like, the way that I feel about my body is actually preventing me from doing some kind of part of my life, right? Then there's also the affective, or, like, the way that the feel about our body, right? And so that includes the shame that we feel. So there's, it's very complex, very dynamic. It's not, and I'm sure as you know, it's not as basic of, like, I like my body, I love my body, or I don't like it, right? And we know that the forces that we live in shape our body, and it depends on our privileges. It depends on our background. It depends on the messages that we got from our, you know, surroundings as we were growing up. We live in a oppressive patriarchal society, you know, and racist society, right? That has set up a way of being that just, doesn't set us up to really like ourselves very much in many different ways. And so when people come to me, quite often they haven't, like, pulled any of this apart yet. And they just know that, like, I hate my body. I hate the way I look. I hate that my body's changing, because it just does. That's just what bodies do. And we're not prepared for it. So again, there are so many different things that kind of go into how we look at our body. And so for me, body image distress is, you know, just the feelings, the difficult, uncomfortable feelings that we get when we think about our body, or we experience the world with our body that feels hard. And then there's the shame that we feel for not having our shit figured out, or not loving our body, like some of this toxic positivity tells us to do. Just love your body. It's like, how come I can't do that? So, and for me, shame kind of came into play as a provider, right? As a dietitian, when I was going through being a dietitian is my second career. But when I went back to school, my own eating disorder and disordered eating fueled that. And then as I healed my body, my relationship with food and my body changed, meaning it got bigger, there was a shame of like, how could I be a dietitian if I'm in a, right? Like in a larger body. Oh, yeah. There's so many layers to it, right? I mean, and it hurts. And that's why I think it's important that we have these conversations to give people the opportunity to just talk about it, not to fix it, but to talk about it. So that's just a very long rant on all that.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
There can be, I guess, this idea that like body image is just what we think about how we look as well. Like on this surface level, I guess that's what we,
right.
Well, that's what the diet culture messages like lead us to believe, like, oh, your body image will be fixed if you change the way you look. And of course, when we have messages that tell us being in a larger body is going to make us less worthy, less valued, less accepted, of course, changing the way we looked is going to probably have some impact there. But what are we doing to change the way we look? It's not actually completely in our control to shrink our body to fit these societal ideas as well. And it's really these 100%. Thoughts we're having. Yeah, like these thoughts that are in our head or these beliefs that have come from these messages that are really forming that picture of how we feel about our body and how we feel in our body.
Yeah. There's a lot of pressure. And, you know, what you said about, you know, being in a smaller body and thinking like, yes, we could, then once we're in a smaller body, our relationship or we're going to feel better, right? Like our body image is going to be healed. You know, I'm very honest and open about my story and like my journey. Cause I think, you know, making your message can be really helpful. But when I was in a smaller body, you know, years ago, I thought that that was the answer to everything. I was miserable. I still thought my body was awful, still, right? And my mental health and my world shrunk, right? Because all I could do was think about like, how can I make my body keep it small, right?
Yeah.
Fast forward, now I'm in a body, I'm in my 40s, I'm a perimenopausal woman. My body has changed. My body is larger than, I mean, I probably exist in a body that younger me would have been like, this is not okay. I'm in this body and my mental health in terms of body image, is so much better. My world, like I started my business, right? Like my world exploded. And I really feel like because I gave myself the space, right? My life is now fuller in a body that I always feared. And so that just kind of goes to show you that, and I'm not saying like body image is all in your head, you know, you're like, not that, but like, it is a mindset kind of thing, in a way that, how do we help people accept, you know, work towards acceptance of their here and now body so that they can spend less time thinking about their body so that like they can go out and like live their lives. That's the whole point, you know?
Yeah. And even when it's in our head, I guess that saying like it's all in your head makes it seem like it's not real or that's something that you've just made up. But even when we look at it in that way, that it's something that's in our head, that's not because we've put it there and it's something that we've chosen to do or something wrong with us. It's because we've absorbed messages from around us. And that's why we think this way or feel this way.
Yeah, exactly. And I, you know, I had a client yesterday and she was in her, I like lately, I like working with people in like later 50s, 60s. I just like that, I guess maybe because I feel more connected to older people than younger people. I don't know, but you know, she was saying, how come I feel this way? You know, she's binging and she's had this like really, you know, awful relationship with food for a really long time. And I was like, I want you to know that this is not your fault. It's not your fault, you know? And I think there's so much shame because we think, well, I did this, or it's my fault that I, you know, my eating is inconsistent and I'm binging and it's my fault that like, I feel out of control around food. And I'm like, it is absolutely not your fault. And like you said, like we absorb, like you've been absorbing for decades. We've all been absorbing for decades. And I always say like, if you had a choice, like your choice would be, okay, I want these thoughts about body and food, these disordered thoughts around body and food and feel awful, or to never have these thoughts and right and feel great, which one would you choose? Nobody's going to pick the first. And so, you know, these thoughts, they're all given to you. And so like, if anybody's listening who's feeling really ashamed about their relationship to their body or their relationship with food, not your fault in one second. But I do understand the shame that comes along with it.
Yeah. And you mentioned before bodies changing over time and like changing throughout our life, which is just the complete opposite to the most of the messages that we get about bodies. It's like we should reach this kind of maturity level that's maybe like late teens, early 20s, some kind of young phase of our lives, and then it just shouldn't change. Or maybe there's acceptable times for it to change, but then it's meant to bounce back, say like pregnancy, or maybe you've got an injury and it's like, oh, well, of course you couldn't do anything. It can change, but it's okay as long as it bounces back. But what we do know is bodies change naturally throughout life as well. And it's not that our bodies are wrong there. It's that we've been fed these messages that are not right. But do you want to maybe talk through like some of the most common times in our lives that we will naturally see body changes to our weight or shape? Or maybe just the way that we feel as well.
Yes. I'm so glad you brought that up because, you know, when you're talking, I'm thinking about like covers of like tabloid magazines and you're like, so-and-so has cellulite. I'm like, who doesn't, right? Like, or so-and-so has the audacity to be like, you know, in their 60s and not look like they did when they were in their 20s. It's like, this is why we're just all so messed up, honestly.
Yeah.
This is why we think, you know, I have clients and I'm sure you do too, who are older and they're like, you know, do you like your body? Right. Like, where are you in that? No, I hate it. When did you like your body? And legit every single time it's like before they had kids or like when they were in high school.
Yeah.
I'm like, you are comparing apples and oranges because our bodies were never meant to be like, you know, we're supposed to get older. And so, I think around these shifts, right. When, you know, I have a lot of friends who are in their 30s, I think this, they start to recognize that their body isn't the same maybe in their 20s and like disordered eating, sure, like pops up, you know, I mean, it can at any time, but especially maybe like at the beginning of a decade, when people start, you know, women especially, or those identifying as women start to have babies and get pregnant, and then especially postpartum. Right. Cause like you said, we've been taught, like, you got to bounce back.
Yeah.
I remember my experience, my son's 11. I didn't bounce back at all. I didn't bounce back. I was like, I'm breastfeeding. I'm supposed to bounce back and like lose all the weight. And it was like, ha ha, not you. So there's that, there is a lot, especially around middle age, perimenopause, because our bodies do shift. It's just what we're supposed to do. Our body composition changes. We're supposed to gain weight around our middle section, because adipose tissue has estrogen. And as our estrogen starts to decline as we get older, you know, this kind of quote unquote extra, right? This redistribution I don't know if our body is actually protective. So, you know, middle age is also a really big time where body image dissatisfaction really increases, and also eating disorders and disordered eating, huge, huge time.
Yeah.
So I think anytime there's like a life stage and a life cycle, and our bodies start to shift, what we do is we compare it to, but I used to be, but I used to fit into a size, whatever, or even the way our bodies move. I used to be able to walk up the stairs without pain in my knees, or I used to be able to like bend over and tie my shoe, but like now I can't, right? And so this is where a lot of grief comes up, because we're mourning the loss of what was. Usually it's like we're mourning a loss of having a body that moved easier, that fit into society's standards. And now it's like we're just left with such dissatisfaction that I would call it grief.
Definitely. That's a perfect word for it, really. And when you mentioned the stress or the grief around like not being able to move in the same way that we've moved before, I've seen this come out recently with several clients actually, where they've got maybe an injury, or maybe it's just that like general aches and pains that are preventing them from doing activities they used to do. And that's something that's really valid to grieve, but what it's gone to is it's because of my weight. And this time of their life is a time that they have gained weight, whether it's because of injury or whether it's just they've just gained weight for whatever reason. That's just what bodies do. but it's been, well, I have this injury, or I have this pain, or I can't move. It's all because of my weight. And even when there's been these kind of similar injuries or similar things at a younger age, at a younger age when their weight has maybe been lower, it's what was the cause of the injury then? Or then it was because I, you know, it's genetics, or I was over exercising, or I was moving too much, and that's what caused it.
Right.
But the cause now is my weight. And it's just, we can really, when we're looking for something, when it's really frustrating, it can make us angry, it can make us feel grief, and we're kind of looking for something to blame a lot of the time. And that can come back to our body and then our weight.
100%. And, you know, our body is the perfect scapegoat, right? Like, we know how to hate our bodies, like, really, really well. Whatever flavor of hate, whatever flavor of hate you like to throw upon your body, like, you're an expert on it, right? And so, let's say you have a client who's feeling really distressed because, you know, maybe they can't, I don't know, like you said, their mobility is affected, or for whatever reason. It's so much easier to say, my body is wrong, I need to fix it, meaning AKA lose weight, especially if you have medical doctors, right? Like, telling them that it is their weight, right? Yes. So we have the medical community kind of like fueling this narrative, but it's so much easier to be like, I've got to fix it, because that's what we know how to do. Like, I still have that thought of like, when something, you know, like I was doing yoga this morning and I'm like, oof, I don't twist. Like, I can't even like twist all the way around anymore. Like, I can't do it. That feels really tough. You know, the thought is, well, then you should lose weight. And I still have that thought. I don't do it, right? It's not available to me, but it's so natural, because we're so used to, okay, we feel grief in our body, anger, frustration, like all that sort of stuff. We feel distress. The only thing that we've really been taught to do is to fix it. Go on a diet. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. However, we know that that doesn't work, right? Because we've been down this hamster wheel. We've been around like a few times, but it's so much easier to focus on the fix, because there's hope. There's hope that we are a little bit more familiar with, than to sit in, oh my God, this feels really hard that my body doesn't move the way that it does, that it does move the way that it does. And we have all these like, I'm wrong, I'm bad, I'm not worthy, I'm lazy, what did I do to myself? You know, I've given up. That's what I hear a lot of. That's really hard to sit in if you don't have support, if you don't have the tools to like unpack it or any of those things. So the easiest thing to do is to fix it, to try and fix it.
And you mentioned before, like, people, it's maybe their doctor or a surgeon, if it's in a case of injury, can reinforce these messages that, like, yes, it is your body that's wrong, and yes, it's your weight specifically. I've actually seen that pop up quite a few times. Just really, really sad. It's just reinforcing the messages that we've already had to feel shame and distrust our body. And these messages come from all over as well. Like, they're not just from our medical community. And I do notice in times of like changes in our lives, which are common times, as you mentioned, that they're common times that we do feel this kind of shame or stress over our body. I do see that those times are maybe times that we see a lot of new messaging pop up from, especially from the diet industry. It's a perfect time to prey on us, really. Do you want to talk a little more about the messages that we get that might reinforce this difficult body does change?
When you were, I was just thinking about a client that I saw a couple of days ago, and I had been working with her a couple of years ago for a while, and then she got busy, but she recently came back to me, and the reason is she's getting married, and she needs, right? And so, like, think of all, you know, the diet culture awfulness that is put on brides to be, or people getting married, the pressure to, like, you know, she went wedding dress shopping and it was like awful. Like, you know, it was so triggering for her, and just like really brought up all the body image stuff again. And oh God, just, you know, you flip through a magazine, and even if you do see kind of plus size or larger bodies, they're proportioned in that kind of maybe hourglass way. So, you know, a lot of people's shapes aren't reflected, right? So we see it in kind of that, and we see it in like mommy influencers, you know, oh my God. Like, it is just so much pressure to look a certain way, to have it all done, right? It's so awful. And then you know, what I see too for some of my clients that are, again, a little bit older is lose the belly fat, right? And they see these influencers, especially on social media, of like, just don't eat these foods or intermittent fast or, and the messaging in all of it is you are wrong. Your body is wrong. It should be conventionally looking like this. And if you don't, what the heck are you doing? You need to be working on yourself. Like, why aren't, you know, and if you're not working on yourself, you suck pretty much. Like you're, you know, your willpower, I hear, I'm sure you hear that a lot from your clients too. Like, I don't have, what's wrong with me that I don't have like the willpower to like go to the gym and like exercise so I can lose weight for my wedding. Like, oh God, oh, just like hugs, you know?
And that idea of willpower, it's really just that we're human and our body has these really strong drives to get its needs met.
Yeah.
And ideally we want it to have those really strong drives, but when we're trying to fight against it and to deny these basic needs, and then our body's fighting from the other way, we want our body to win, really, even if we don't, because of the messages we've got. If our body's not winning, we're going to keep sinking into deeper problems, things like eating disorders, and things like that. So we really want our body to win, even if we can't see it in the moment. But that's, I think, my understanding when people use willpower is it's this like my body is winning rather than I'm winning, and that's a failure.
Yeah. And also like winning, our bodies wanting to win, like it's probably not what people expect, right? And so like in our mind, if I'm winning or my body is winning, it means that like I'm smaller, right? Or I've lost the weight. But as I said, like my story for me, my body winning and myself winning is actually being in recovery, you know, recovery and healing, you know, my relationship with food and my body and having a larger body, that is actually winning. And so and again, this concept of willpower, you know, again, to go back to this client who's like, how come I can't get myself to go to the gym? And I'm like, because there's something really smart inside of you that recognizes that that movement is really tied to weight loss and manipulating the size of your body. Yeah. And you don't want that. You know, she doesn't want to lose weight. She just wants to feel better in her body. And I'm like, wow, how cool is it that your brain and body were saying, we're not ready to go back to the gym yet, because we haven't figured this out. We haven't untangled it. And then how can we, you know, in our work together, re-engage in movement that feels supportive? That doesn't mean, because she didn't have any idea of what movement could look like outside. And so it's not a willpower. I'm like, we think it's a willpower thing, but there's no. Like, this is really smart. This is like freaking brilliant. And that, I think, you know, same with when you work with your clients, our goal is that like people aren't so hard on themselves and see like there's not a failure. It's just actually a lot of times just protective.
And I love that you brought up before the messages aren't just like the physical kind of messages that we see, like maybe on social media or post and things. You brought up before that the dress shopping and just going and seeing all the images of brides and the dresses are maybe like on display in small sizes. And that's what we are kind of told a bride looks like. So it's not just kind of the written messages, it's that. And I wonder with the, what you just brought up with your client, not having the kind of quote unquote willpower to get back to the gym and then understanding it's more because of what she thinks of as doing that maybe exercise or the gym work. And the messaging that we see in the gym as well. So whether it's like really blatant messaging or whether it's like quite subtle, it's often for a lot of gyms and a lot of people, it's around weight loss. So if we're going back to that environment with like maybe new goals that we haven't really worked through, or we just wanting to feel good, or then we're surrounded by these weight loss kind of messages or just general atmosphere, that's going to feel quite disconnected as well. And definitely can be a reason that we don't want to be in that space.
Yeah. And I think even now, like those messaging, like, diet culture is like really hip to the fact that we know that diets don't work, right? In the long term, you know, weight loss diets do not work in the long term. There's no research study that shows that they do. And I always want to give grief around that because that can be really hard to hear because we've been sold like a whole bunch of lies around that. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, the companies, right, know about that, it's like, they're getting really sneaky. So for instance, Noom, right? Which I don't know, you know, Noom is kind of like
those
the millennial.
Ads pop up. Yes.
Yes. I know. Cause when you work with people around nutrition and you like type in or like, I'm doing this diet. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to type this into my browser and I'm totally going to get weight loss ads now. Yeah. But like, okay, we're going for it. So like Noom, which is like a millennial, you know, Weight Watchers isn't Weight Watchers anymore. It's WW.
Yeah.
The messaging is like, it does tie back to body image because like, we want you to feel like beautiful or like, love your body, or, you know, we help you feel strong and powerful. But if you look at who the messages are coming from, so often there's no representation, there's no body diversity.
Yeah.
And it's coded for weight loss.
Yep.
And so that, you know, Christy Harrison put out her book, she has Anti-Diet, which I love, but then her second book, The Wellness Trap, talks all about that as well, like how sneaky wellness is. And it's saying, well, we're going to help you in your body and whatever, and like, fair. And usually the really hidden like bottom line is we're going to do that by helping you lose weight. And so it's no wonder that people feel really like icky in gyms. They don't feel like safe spaces or other online platforms, you know, especially around movement, because it's just so insidious. And I get caught up in that stuff too, you know, like wellness culture and things. I'm like, oh, this looks good. Like, you know, but then you have to sit back and like actually put my critical thinking hat on. You know.
Yeah, definitely. And I think they can be so tricky to navigate. I think when I started seeing like the Noom ads was actually when I was going through training for intuitive eating. So I was just moving to a non-diet space. Like I'd kind of recognized the harms and was moving over, but there's always that period of really wanting to do non-diet work, but still not being quite there. We're still learning.
Sure.
And we're still kind of saying, but why is it really so harmful if some people want to lose weight and in this kind of messy period? And it's actually really difficult as a provider who's been trained and worked in this weight-centric environment and diet culture for so long as well. And these Noom ads are so clever in the way they like pretend that they're about not just weight loss, like it's will help you to feel good. It's all, we're going to help you to feel good because when your body is smaller, it's better and it's more valued. But the way they market it is so clever. And they really, I think on the ads, they can, if you're not clued in to really picking it up, they can make it sound like it isn't a diet. They say, we're about psychology. The psychology is about
mindful eating.
Yes. Psychology is like, don't eat red foods, eat green foods. Like,
Exactly.
And you know, mindful eating for weight loss. Sorry.
Mindful eating for weight. No, that's exactly, it's exactly right. And I know the term in like intuitive eating was kind of co-opted by Noom. And then the authors of intuitive eating were like really, really pissed. This is like a while ago. One of my dietitians who works for me worked for Noom. Like before she came to work for me, she, you know, because, you know, we're all, when we learn how to be dietitians and nutritionists, like we're all taught from the weight centric way and we graduate and pretty much all of us, that's how we practice. That was me too. And then we kind of figure out like, I don't know, like we get in that messy middle. Like I totally get what you're talking about. And then we kind of find our footing here. Yeah. But my dietitian, she worked at Noom when she graduated her, you know, dietetic, you know, she got PNRD. And she was like, yep, they, you know how they promote, like they're all about wellness and whatever. She's like, no, they were all about weight loss. And she just had like awful, awful thing. And she put stuff on her Instagram. She has like stories about how awful they were because they know that if they said, you know, we'll help you lose weight, you know, people don't want to sometimes admit that because dieting isn't necessarily cool anymore, but like caring about your health is, and like feeling better. Everybody wants to feel better. Who doesn't want to feel better? Yeah. But the way that the diet culture industry still does it is through like weight loss. And one other thing is that Noom offers like these sort of things offer community. And that's why a lot of people stay. Like, do you have Overeaters Anonymous, like in the UK? Do you have? Yeah. So that can be, you know, that's the whole probably other podcast episode, but I've had a lot of clients stick with OA, not because they want to heal from what they've, you know, their restrictive kind of way they look at food, but the community they want to lose.
Yeah.
And the camaraderie around this.
Yeah.
So it's hard to kind of contend with that sometimes.
Definitely. And it's, I mean, it's a whole other topic as well. But when we look at moving to intuitive eating, a lot of people are doing that from a space where their friends and family are very still within diet culture and still have those beliefs. So they can feel very alone moving away from that and alienated from conversations and events because doing it now on their own. And it's moving away from a community for a lot of people, which is really, really hard, even if we know the community, even if we've realized that community is causing us harm.
Yeah. I mean, I know for me, you know, weight being, you know, weight loss, health, like that sort of thing, was my identity in my 20s, you know. And when I went back to school to be a dietitian, it was fueled by my disordered eating. Cause I'm like, oh, I know how to be healthy. Like I'm great. You know, I know how to tell people what to do. And when I shifted away from that, you know, years and years later, like a decade, you know, 2 decades later, but like years later, it was sad. It was lonely. And I think a lot of people stop, you know, a lot of clinicians stop doing this work because it feels really lonely. And that's why it's so important to like connect with others and have groups. And especially for people who are not clinicians, but are embarking in intuitive eating, and healing their relationship with food, you can't do it by yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, sure. I mean, you can, but having other people alongside and people to talk to is so important part of the journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is. And you mentioned for providers as well, just having connection with others who are doing similar work or in the non-diet space. I don't have to also be, you know, dietitian for dietitian. There's so many other healthcare providers in the space as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering what maybe your advice would be for someone who maybe they haven't been through kind of body changes that have caused distress yet. But we're all surrounded by these messages. And in that way, a lot of us can be at risk of developing body distress or body shame. What would be some advice for someone to maybe just protect themselves so that they can feel more confident in their body for maybe changes that their body does go through?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say the first thing is don't put pressure on yourself to love your body.
Yeah.
I mean, I do this work for a living, you know, I kind of consider myself a body image coach, and I certainly do not love my body like at all times. And honestly, like, would I say I love it? The answer is probably no. So instead of kind of having your goal be, I got to love my body, especially as it changes, can we change the narrative to like, and whatever word works for you, but like, can I respect my body? Can I show my body kindness? Meaning like, I might not really like my body today, but like, I'm still going to feed it. Or I'm still going to stretch today, right? So really changing the expectations of how you're going to feel around your body, especially at all stages. So can we switch the narrative? Body love is never the goal, no matter what like marketing and advertising tells you. We just want to get you to body, you know, kindness, respect. And if you're in a stage where you even don't like your body, if you're in body hatred, can we at least just move you into dislike, right? Like, it's a continuum.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing I would say, just manage your expectations. The second is, you know, I know a lot of people say this, but like, you know, make sure that your world, and we do that through social media, you see lots of different people in lots of different bodies and shapes and sizes and colors and abilities, because what we typically see is thin people having all the fun and people in larger bodies like must be miserable. But like the truth of the matter is that there are many, many people who are living their best life possible in larger bodies and love having a larger body. So I think it's really important to stretch that out and to see that, because then that can be really helpful. Another thing I would say, like we talked about, is find community through a Facebook group or join, you know, I don't know, or listen to the podcast, or you know, just surround yourself, especially like when we can't get there ourselves. Like, so when I'm in a space, I'm like feeling really low and I can't get there for myself. Sometimes just like, you know, again, reaching out in a Facebook community or listening to a podcast, like helps me hold the space, can be really helpful. And then I guess the last thing I want to say is that there is no like cap and gown graduation of like, woohoo, you love your body. Like you've done this body image thing. Woohoo, like here you go. And now you're going to live like happily ever after. It is not a straight path. It is a very winding road. And no matter where you are, there's always going to be distress around your body. There's always going to be grief at different points. And that is normal. So I think the shame gets piled on. We're like, but I should. I'm sure you hear this from your clients who do intuitive eating, but I've come so far. Yeah. Like, I shouldn't feel this way around food. I shouldn't feel this way on my body. It's like, yeah, you got a body living in diet culture land and you're swimming in a toxic soup. Like, of course. And so the work really to do is to develop coping tools and support so that when you're in this grief or this distress, that it doesn't completely take you under.
Yeah.
That we can acknowledge it, have compassion around it, and do things to help us kind of move through it. So
I love those tips. And definitely working on. Yeah. I loved when you mentioned body acceptance over this idea that we have to love our body. It just really opens up space to be able to do this work. Because if we're in a place where we, as you said, are really hating our body right now, it can feel like, well, I can't do that work, or I can't work on improving my relationship with my body and food because I hate it. So how can I care for it and look after it? But when we kind of separate that, and the goal isn't loving ourselves, or the goal isn't having to even accept ourselves before doing that work, we can actually work on our relationship with our body before we even stop hating it. Because you mentioned things like our self-care and like the way that we can care for our body. We don't have to like our body to be able to do that.
Yeah. And sometimes, we were talking before you started recording about, I love that you said this, and I was like, oh, how's the podcast, recording? You're like, yeah, we don't start things when we're 100% ready. We just go and do them. And I love that because I'm like a recovering perfectionist. And for me, I'd like want to like know everything before I got started. And I just love what you said, because if we wait until we know it all or love ourselves or do whatever, we are not going to do anything. Like, we're not going to get anywhere. And I think that just comes from like the patriarchy, that comes from hustle culture of like, you've got to know it. You've got to do it. And I also want to say, if you're someone who is struggling with distressing body image and you still want to lose weight, that's okay too. Like when we talk about intuitive eating, when they say, like put weight loss on the back burner, I actually like don't say that ever, because I get what they're saying, but like, how could you not want to lose weight? How can people not want to lose weight based on like everything we talked about? And I want to talk about that. So it's okay to still have that desire. I like, if someone said like, whoosh, let's like, make everything go away and you could maybe have a smaller body. And like, what I'm like, okay. Like who wouldn't want it? Because, having a changing body just is hard. It can be.
Yeah.
So, that's just kind of what I wanted to say, is like, it's okay. You're not failing, and there's no shame. If you still have thoughts of like, I've been doing all this work, I've been showing up to session, and I still have this desire to lose weight, like, it's okay. We're not going to judge you. Like, we get it. We get it.
Yeah. Yeah. And considering the messages that we have around us, that's so natural. It's so natural to still have these thoughts. And I like to think of like our thoughts, that when our thoughts are really strong, they become like beliefs. They become something that we can't see that there's another way. It feels so, so, so true. And these thoughts that we have and beliefs, they're influenced by the messages around us. And these diet culture weight loss messages are so strong. So of course, we're still going to have these thoughts. And there's ways that we can weaken these thoughts and bring in new thoughts as well. But even when these like unhelpful or unsupportive thoughts and beliefs pop into our head, we don't have to act on them. We're allowed to have these thoughts and beliefs without actually acting on them. So we're allowed to still say, oh, right now, I just wish I could lose weight and not have to deal with our world stigmatizing me and these difficult things in our world, maybe the doctor appointment coming up, I don't want to have to deal with that in a larger body. I wish I could lose weight. We're allowed to have these thoughts while still being able to learn to navigate and acknowledge, actually, that's not going to help me. I've learned from my past experience. I'm going to just sit with that thought and let it go. That obviously takes some practice. And
yes, I love that. Like, we don't have to fuse with them. And I was talking to my friend who was trying on the wedding dresses, and she was like, oh my God. I was like, well, first of all, this is like your first time doing it. She has more appointments. And like, next time you do it, let's just expect that these thoughts around your body are going to show up. And so like, you know what we should just do? Let's just pull it a chair to the table, right? Because they're like, can we welcome them in and say, I hear you. There's a need that's not being met. I get this part feels really scared and threatened and is trying to protect you. And so let's just form a different relationship with these thoughts, because sometimes when the thoughts pop up, we're like, oh no, I shouldn't be having these. Like, these feel really scary. Yeah. It's like every time you like open up the fridge, or like every time you're going to go to your, try on your wedding dress, go to another appointment, there's going to be these thoughts there. So like, let's pull it up a chair and just like talk to it and just, you know, say, I get it. You're here. You feel really scared. I feel really scared too. And I'm still going to do it anyway.
Yeah. I was going to ask you next what someone might be able to do if they're currently experiencing this shame or distress, but I think we've just naturally shifted into answering anyway. But are there any other maybe like tools or ideas that you have, or ways that we can cope and build confidence in our body when we're already in that really difficult place?
One, the thing that came to me is we talked about like scaling, you know, so scaling is when you check in with yourself and see how you're feeling at any kind of given moment, right? Mm-hmm. And so we could use this with body image. So let's say you're like not having a great body image day and you're trying on clothes from last season, right? Because now it's changing seasons where I am and it's getting colder. Yeah. And, you know, we're taking off the clothes that we wore last fall and we're trying them on, right? And let's say that's you. And you start trying them on and like your body image starts to tank, right? Or you're feeling like really distressed. One of the things that we can do is just scale it and like, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10 or 1 to 5, you know, 1 being like, I am cool, like this is great. And 5 or 10, you know, whatever you do, is so, I'm so activated, this feels so hard, is to check in and be like, how are you doing, right? Maybe we check in before we try the clothes on or before we see family that we feel, you know, uncomfortable with. And if the distress is like, let's say we have a scale of 1 to 10, you're at a 6 or above, that means you're pretty activated. That means your nervous system is probably like a little on fire. So we don't do it, right? We just stop. Like, so in changing, trying on clothes, we'd be like, all right, we're good. We're going to like not do this anymore. We will continue at another time. So it's kind of protecting ourselves. We don't have to deal with it if it feels too distressing. And so what my coach and mentor says to me is like, take that, put it in a box and put it on a shelf. And like, we can always take down your distress later. Like, we can always pick that up and talk about it later. So really just checking in with yourself. How are you feeling? What do you need at that moment? Right. So is it just to like, again, listen to a podcast to like bring you to a different space? Is it just to kind of like dissociate for a while, look at your phone, like whatever you need to do to kind of bring down your distress level in that moment. But checking in with yourself is really, really important.
I love that idea, actually. There's things that we're going to have to do that do bring our attention to our body. That's just kind of a natural part of life. And sometimes we will have the option to do it now or do it at another time. And when we do that, checking in, that is this a good time? Because there's going to be times that we feel more relaxed or more confident or more at peace with our body, and there's going to be times that we feel less so. And really checking in and doing those activities at the times that will be most supportive is such a great tool and way to get through these more difficult activities.
Absolutely. And I think with practice, like doing this work, again, this is not like a race. This is like lifelong work, unfortunately. Yeah. We just start to get a little bit more used to like feeling distressed around our body and then being able to be like, okay, well, what do I need? For me, usually I have to like remember, like, there's usually something else going on in my life right now, right? It's usually I feel out of control or something. It's not really about my body. It's something else, but I just know how to focus on my body. So really, again, just like tuning into like, hey, what really is going on? And again, seeking support and maybe just even starting a conversation with another person about how you're feeling is really important. It's always worse in our heads. Like, it's always like a million times worse in our heads.
So true.
Yeah.
Oh, that was such great advice and just information that you've shared. And I really wish we could keep talking for longer, but I know we both need to get off. But I'd like to ask you, where can listeners find you if they do want to learn more about you or the work that you do and
Sure.
Get some support.
Thank you. It's been so fun. I feel like we could talk. I agree. I feel like we could talk about this forever. It's been such an honor to talk with you. So if you're just interested in learning about my private practice and also like my story about like who I am and how I came to be, you can find that at happyvalleynutrition.com. And in terms of my Bitchin' Body Image RD, which is where I, you know, help other clinicians talk about foundational body image skills, that's through Instagram, and that's Bitchin', BITCHIN, Body Image RD, and that's on Instagram. So that's kind of where I, do all my stuff.
Lovely. And I'll put those in the show notes as well, so that they're written out, if that helps people as well.
Great.
It's been so lovely, Amanda. Thank you so much for joining me and for this conversation. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Sam. I really appreciate it.
It's been so lovely to share this episode with you today. I would love for you to visit today's guest with the links they shared. And for more support and information, including articles, free resources, online courses, and individualized support, you can visit my home on the internet at foodlifefreedom.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating and review on the podcast platform you use, and feel free to use the three-dot symbol to share with anyone who may find this episode helpful. If you have a question or topic you would love to have covered on the podcast, I would love to hear from you.